Hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's just seconds after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. This is Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon, sitting in for Martha. And I have a nice lineup of guests coming in today to talk to us about a lot of interesting things. Maria Levischuk will drop by. She's going to tell us about the Community Health Center downtown. We'll have a little update on the St. Vincent de Paul Turkey Drive. Rena Sims and Paul Sundin will be here. Salsa dance classes are coming up, and the host of those dances, Alejandro, will be joining us very shortly. And Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove, a couple of storytellers, are going to do a presentation Wednesday night called Coming Out, Stories of Action and Reaction. We'll hear from them and the school district's robotics program. Adam Doten Ferguson will be here to join us on Juno Afternoon. Right now, it's time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A U.S. North Dakota senator has introduced a bill to create a commission on Native children. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov reports on how it may apply to children in the state.
In a press release, Senator Heidi Heitkamp says the commission's goal is to examine challenges specific to Native children and make recommendations for improvements. Mortality has increased for Native children since 2000, and they're overrepresented in foster care, have high suicide rates, and lower graduation rates than white students. On the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming, the graduation rate for students is around 50%. The statewide graduation for all students is closer to 80%. David Holbrook is in the Wyoming Department of Education, and one of his responsibilities is Native American education. He says any effort to focus on Native children is welcome.
There's historical trauma related to education, and so creating a positive attitude and towards education and creating positive momentum that encourages kids to stay in school and get their diplomas and even go on to higher education. Anything that can, you know, promulgate that is going to be a positive thing for the communities.
The bill also establishes a subcommittee made up of young Native people to weigh in on the issues. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
The Alaska Federation of Natives will give a public response today to a petition filed by the state of Alaska. According to AFN, the state filed a petition Monday in U.S. Supreme Court to review the decision in the state of Alaska versus Jewell, also known as the Katie John case. The decision gives the federal government additional control over Alaskan waters. South Dakota's southern counties are under a snow advisory today. Several reservations could see almost half a foot of heavy, wet snow. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
The Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations in southern South Dakota are under a snow advisory through the day. Yankton Sioux Tribal Land and the rest of southeast South Dakota are under an advisory through tonight. Mike Foose with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls says a widespread 3 to 5 inches of snow is forecast for the day.
It looks like the worst of the worst would probably be confined pretty close to the Nebraska border. And that will arch a little bit northeastward through actually the Sioux Falls area right here as the afternoon progresses. We're thinking that the snow band could be pretty tight gradient as it gets in South Dakota. And then as you get north of I-90, you will rapidly run out of the accumulating snowfall.
The advisory area stretches from a few counties in eastern Wyoming to northern Wisconsin. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Despite a constitutional ban on gay marriage, two men were recently wed in Oklahoma under a tribal government. KGOU's Kurt Gortney has the story.
Darren Black Bear and Jason Pickle were legally married last week in a small ceremony at a chapel on an old military fort west of Oklahoma City. The two men were given a marriage license by the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. Black Bear, who is 45 years old, is a member of the Oklahoma-based tribe. It's one of the few Native American governments in the United States to allow same-sex marriage. Black Bear and his partner are the third same-gender couple to receive marriage licenses from the tribe since 2012. All federally recognized tribes can approve laws for their land and members. The Cheyenne Arapaho's code regarding marriage doesn't specifically address gender, referring to the parties simply as Indians. The couple wants other tribes to adopt similar laws. Black Bear says he never imagined being able to marry his partner. He described the experience as surreal. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
In November 1944, the National Congress of American Indians was established in response to termination policy. About 80 delegates from 50 tribes gathered in Denver, Colorado. The founding members stressed the need for protection of treaty and sovereign rights. They also committed to better the quality of life of Native people. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
About 6 minutes after 3 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today, and my first two guests. This is kind of like an annual thing for us. We do this every year about the same time.
Yeah.
So my first two guests, and I wouldn't have gotten this if Martha had not. She had to take a bye on the show today, so I'm filling in for her, and I'm really pleased
to see you once again
here.
Well,
so this is Rena Sims and Paula Sumdum, and they are with the St. Vincent de Paul organization, and they're in the middle of the turkey drive, and I guess it's a roaring success right at the start, right, Rena?
Yes, it is. It's a great success. I want to thank David McDonald very much so for donating to the community 250 turkeys. We just laughed and laughed, and we want to thank the Eagles for donating some money, a large check for us to get some canned goods. We're 3 days in, and we already have over 300 people. So Paula's got
300 people that have requested baskets.
Requested baskets. All right. Yes.
Okay, so Paula?
Well, once again, we're seeking food and money donations for St. Vincent de Paul's annual turkey baskets for people and families in our community. Last year, we did over 500 baskets, and we're looking to top that probably this year.
We pick up organizations, schools, and other organizations here so that some of the disabled people and things that are not able to come in and sign up but have needs, so we filter that way too.
Mm-hmm. We want to thank so many people in Juneau, specifically Myra Munson, who has just given so generously year after year, Shorty Tonsgaard for his constant giving of turkeys and potatoes, for the young men and women of the Saga and with the Mormon Church who have come to help us organize the food baskets, distribute them, and even deliver them to those that are housebound. It's truly a community helping the community, and it really is very worthwhile, and it's so gratifying to see the smiles on the little ones' faces, because we try to put little treaties in the bag also just for the kids. You can sign up at 8617 Teal Street behind Mendenhall Auto in the Smith Hall at St. Vincent's. Their phone number is 789-5535, and the baskets will be given away at the community center on Postal Way behind the post office in the valley.
And you can, if you don't have time to come in, you can mail a check, or you can go on twitter.com. /SVDP Juneau and donate online. We would so appreciate that. Is SVDPJuneau.org. We would just love that. It takes about $40 per basket that we donate out, and that consists of 2 cans of corn, 2 cans of green beans, cranberry sauce, stuffing, sweet potatoes or potatoes, the turkey, of course, rolls, fruit cocktail,
gravy.
Pies. They usually walk away with 2 bags, and we have a wonderful man by the name of Alex that will drive to homes to drop that for the elderly. We do have some elderly people that are requesting turkey slices or ham slices. They don't want the great big turkey.
Yeah.
And that's a blessing, too. It's a real beautiful thing what Juneau does here. We take care of our own. As I said on the last broadcast, last year around this time, I lost my son, and I happened to be down in Seattle, and I saw that they did not do what our city, at least these two places that I went, what our city does. You know, out of a population of 30,000 people, we only have 500 families, maybe 550 that sign up. I think we're doing pretty good here.
Yeah, we sure are.
Yeah, and I want to remember Alaska Marine Lines. Every single year they bring
every
a van
year.
Over so we can keep all the stuff cold that needs to be, and they come and pick it back up. They're always there for us. So we really appreciate what the community does.
And Alaska Housing has been fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
To separate those days out for us so that we can do that. And they give us the dates, the Thursdays through Sunday, to pass out the baskets.
To store the baskets, make them, and then let us distribute them. Mm-hmm. And they're so great. They help us with cleanup. We're pretty good about that, but they helped us with cleanup and helping the people in their the Riverbend community of Alaska Housing. A lot of their clients can use the baskets too. So.
Do you need any volunteers to help pack baskets or sort food or anything like that?
We sure do.
They'll hold you hostage.
And this is a thankful town, and it shows. It's a grateful town in the way that they care for the people in their community. And we're wishing everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And it's a pleasure to sit down on Thanksgiving Day when we go to give our blessing and we give thanks to God, to think about so many families that get to get together on these holidays. And, again, it's people that are on fixed income, people that have tragedies that happened. Last year there was a super influx of fires that took place in this town, and I think out of all the years that we've been here, we've never heard of so many emergency deaths where people died and things were, and they were still trying to recoup.
Yep. Okay, so the drive is on. Let's have those contact pieces of information one more time.
Okay.
See you getting your paper out there. How can people, how do people get in touch if they want to donate?
Okay.
So we want to go to Twitter, www.svdpjuno.org. So www.svdpjuno.org.
Okay, they can order and they can donate. Okay.
And the address is 8617 Teal Street, which is behind Mendenhall Auto and the Nugget Mall.
So if you have stuff you want to drop off, you can bring it there and drop it off. Somebody will take care
and
of you right there.
And their phone number is 789-5535.
Do you have hours for that organization? When
10 to 5.
10 to 5. Okay.
10 to 5. And we want to thank St. Vincent de Paul for honoring us to allow us to give.
And the other thing is, now, if someone wants to sign up to receive a basket, same set of contact information?
That same set of contact information.
Okay, just say, I'm looking for a basket. Yeah. Can I sign someone up if I know they need it?
Yes.
And you can sort it out if they accidentally sign up also. They're not
going
to wind up with a house full of turkeys.
We see if there's double dipping and all the other.
Yeah,
yes.
Good. Okay,
yes.
Good. All right. Yeah. Okay, hey, thank you very
thank
much.
You.
The drive is going wonderfully, and I'm really pleased to see how many people have already kind of responded to this big need in our community, but not quite so big a need as it could be if we weren't taking care of our own people. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Goodbye, Juno.
It's quarter after three, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Martha, sitting in, and I'm in charge of Juneau Afternoon today, and I have yet another really interesting guest here to talk to us. Alejandro Soria is here, up from, I believe, Uruguay. And is planning, or is actually going to be offering a salsa workshop entitled Refining Our Basics from November 5th through the 26th. So this is a number of Tuesday evening meetings, 7:15 to 8:15 p.m. Alejandro, where are you holding your sessions?
That's going to happen in Juneau Urgent Care.
Juneau Urgent and Family Care. Juneau Urgent Care on the second
just
floor.
Just in case if you get injured.
Well, how handy. So if you throw something out in the salsa, you're just
very
right
handy.
Down. But no one's going to do that.
No. Okay. It's going to be easy. It's going to be easy.
Okay. So how did you come to salsa dancing yourself?
Well, actually...
To teaching salsa.
Teaching salsa, yeah. I was influenced, and actually I was... I started with Antonio Diaz and Heather, that everybody knows. They were working really hard several years ago here in Juneau, and they left a lot of people interested in salsa. So, yeah, I started with them, and I used to dance salsa before as a Latin guy, but never as a with partner. So when I found out that you can dance with a partner and it's way more fun, I just dive into it, and I'm trying to share that with people that that is something that more interested when you share with someone and actually to become one in a choreography and in a harmony is beautiful.
Alejandro, you said you titled your subtitled your workshop "Refining Our Basics." Mm-hmm. So, what? Who are you looking for? Who do you expect will come in the door?
Well, actually, that came up because we already had some workshops already. So, some people is coming into, and I'm looking for everyone that is interested. Even though if you don't have any rhythm at all, you should try because probably you don't know if you have it. Because you probably didn't try. And I worked with people that was really, really, per se, bad. But they found out that they weren't that bad. So you should try. So, and I'm willing to try with you.
Oh, okay.
And I know some tricks. The way that I approach the teaching is a little different of the normal teaching salsa. I'm going more for the beat, how to... teaching people how to learn to listen in the beat, how to listen in the music, and going into the music, looking for a pattern, looking for the what is driving you and the music to move in a certain way. So I work with that. It's more fun, actually. And it's very effective, too. Yeah.
If you want to take the class, are you looking for couples to come or can singles
No, anybody.
Come?
You don't have to bring a partner, so
okay.
You just come over and we actually today we're gonna accept casual drop ins. We're gonna accept that too. So just for people to have the chance to try, maybe something different that you can find out to do in this winter. So that'd be fine.
Now, you are doing this on the second floor of the Juneau Urgent and Family Care, so you're limited in space. So once you get a class together, then are you going to continue to accept drop-ins as the class goes on?
Yeah, it all depends. If we have a good number that exceed the acceptance, we're going to put another day and look out
okay.
for that.
Okay.
But yeah. We'll see what happens.
So let's say there's someone who is maybe a little hesitant and wants to make sure that it's okay for them to come or something like that. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can call me at 957-4411 or send me an email to a transculturaldancing@gmail.com.
Transculturaldancing, all one word, @gmail.com.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah.
Good enough. So is there a charge for the classes?
No, it's just for
so
free.
It's free. Okay.
Yeah, feel free.
All right. So here's an opportunity. Tuesday nights, all through the month of November, mm-hmm. up on the second floor of Juneau Urgent Care out in the valley. If you have questions, your phone number again is
957-4411.
Okay, and folks who want to email you can email you at transculturaldancing, all one word, at gmail.com. That's Alejandro, right. Good luck with your classes. I hope a lot of people show up. And
thank you. Yeah,
learn
I hope so too. And my plan is to actually keep going with older dances too, like merengue, cha-cha-cha, and there is some Brazilian coming from Africa with his kizomba, and there's plenty of other dances that I wanted to show at least to people and see the fun that is learning different cultures through the dancing.
All right, transcultural dancing. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
About 25 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are going to be doing a presentation of some stories of action and reaction at Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. And they've been on my show before. We've talked on the radio before. Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove. Cosgrove as a storyteller, but McClear as a poet. So.
Oh, no, I tell you stories.
I know.
Oh,
this
okay.
Time, yeah.
No, Pat is very much a storyteller. I would consider her, Pat, an accomplished storyteller, which is why it's exciting for me to join forces with her. And, Pat, you missed the key part of that. The first part of that was coming out,
yes.
Stories of action, yes. And reaction.
So. What can you tell us about what you're going to be doing?
How many months ago did Tom called and he said, "Hey, I got an idea," and he pitched this these coming out stories of action, that'd be me, reaction, that'd be him, and I fell for it. And so for the past 4 or 5 months, we've been writing, rewriting, and throwing in some little rehearsals back and forth, and I think we're ready to rock and roll.
So what's the format going to be like for this thing?
Well, the format is that both Pat and I have got three chapters in a longer story. And so we're going to interleave. Pat's going to start. I'm going to tell part of my story. And so through the evening, all of those stories work together. And what I want to say is about coming out is the interesting thing for me is these are stories that are powerful in people's lives. So I'm attracted to it. And I have a sister that came out as a lesbian a number of years ago. And so when someone comes out, they're taking an action of coming out, but then there's who they're coming out to. And so it was a natural, I think.
The evening will begin with members of the Pride Juno Pride Chorus singing. So an ensemble will begin, and then a duo, I believe, follows. So there'll be two musical selections prior to our telling stories. So that's a nice way to set the tone and a nice relaxing way to start.
PFLAG is that's involved in this as well. As a matter of fact, are you doing this partially as a benefit for PFLAG or...?
Yes.
Yeah.
The $15 ticket price is basically a donation to PFLAG. It covers the cost of the rental and the rest of the monies go towards PFLAG.
Mm-hmm. PFLAG stands for?
Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Okay. So this is increasingly something that touches closer and closer to people, and the reason I think is because it's become acceptable now to come out to a greater extent in our society. So people are coming out, and as you said, the reaction to that is not something that most of us have, you know, a set reaction to. It's kind of like you take a deep breath and then you start figuring out what you're going to say next. It's going to be interesting to see how you tell this in a story.
Well, I think the beauty of any well-told story is that it's got universal truths. It has things that we as individuals can relate to. And so if you have someone who has come out to you or you have come out, you're going to see threads here that resonate. And, and a good story is humorous, it's poignant, it's thought-provoking, and these stories are all of that and more. And I want to tell you, there's fun here. There's humor here. There is, you know, and so it's good. It's positive. I think it'll touch.
If there is not humor, then we're not human, I think, is basically what that works out to. So it's the humor that really gets you through.
What I think both of us will notice in the audience the nods of the head in agreement, like, oh, yeah, been there. Oh, I remember when that happened to me. Oh, yep. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll both, the sets of stories that Tom and I are both telling, will get a response from various audience members of, yeah, uh-huh, been there, yep.
So you're doing this in the Nickelodeon.
That's correct.
So this is like a theater venue.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a big circle, which might be a better way for this to play.
No, sure. I don't think so at all,
okay.
Because I think this is performance.
Mm-hmm.
This is storytelling as performance. This isn't, this is a story that I've only told around the kitchen table. These are stories that have been written and thought about, and it is truly a performance piece. And so, and I think people still don't quite get storytelling. Right now in the U.S., there's a renaissance in storytelling. People are embracing it in ways that they haven't been before. Mudrooms, our local Mudrooms event, is an example of that. And so this is a different type of storytelling. This is not around the campfire, though you could tell these around the campfire. But it's truly, this is a good venue for it, perfect venue for it.
Initially, I think there was some confusion, and we received emails asking for clarification. Some folks thought that they were expected to tell their own stories,
okay.
and that, in fact, is not what is expected. What is expected is that you sit, you listen, you enjoy, and Tom and I will take on the spotlight of telling the stories.
Well, it's reassuring for, I would imagine, for a number of people who were confused about that. This is on November 6th.
That's tomorrow.
At 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. The charge is $15, and that's going to... at least partially after the rent is paid and everything like that, it's going to support PFLAG.
Correct. PFLAG of Juno.
PFLAG of Juno, and the Juno Pride Chorus will also be joining you in
they
the middle of
singing,
the performance.
They will be singing, yes.
Okay. Terrific. Coming out, stories of action and reaction. Pat McClear and Tom Cosgrove, a couple of pro storytellers, ready to turn you into a...
Come on out. If you haven't been to a storytelling event, this is the one to try. I guarantee you.
Outstanding. Thank you very much for coming on and alerting us to this.
Thank you, Pat.
This is Bird Note. The brains of chickadees grow in the late summer and early fall. At this time of year, the birds cache food, usually seeds, throughout their home range. Come winter, they need to be able to find what they've stashed. The growing part of the brain is the hippocampus, which plays an important role in spatial memory. Dr. Fernando Nottebohm of Rockefeller University in New York studies the growth of neurons in the brains of birds. He focused on the remarkable ability of black-capped chickadees to recall the locations of hundreds of stored seeds. His lab produced the first evidence that in the adult brain of birds, neurons are replaced periodically with the learning of new behaviors. Dr. Nottebohm suggests that as demand for memory space peaks, chickadees discard cells that hold old memories and replace them with new cells that store fresh memories. Studying the ability of a bird's brain to generate new neurons might uncover ways to replace brain cells lost due to injury, stroke, or degeneration, as happens in diseases such as Parkinson's, Huntington's, and Alzheimer's. Perhaps we should reconsider how we use the term bird brain. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you hear a fact on today's Bird Note you'd like to follow up on? You can read all the scripts at birdnote.org.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 5th of November, 2013. It's the birthday of the runner and writer George Sheehan, born in Brooklyn, 1918. He was a track star at Manhattan College, became a successful doctor, hit a midlife slump, started drinking heavily, read a Greek philosopher who said that the glory of God was man fully alive. And it convinced George Sheehan to go back to running. He ran on the roads. Before people did this, he ran in a ski mask and long johns, 45 years old. And 5 years later, he set a world record for his age group with a mile of 4 minutes and 47 seconds. He ran 50 marathons, including 21 consecutive Boston marathons. He wrote a weekly column about running, which continued for 25 years. When he resumed running in the mid-1960s, amateur running was pretty much unheard of, and by the late 70s, 30 million Americans were running for recreation. George Sheehan, who wrote, "It's very hard in the beginning to understand that the whole idea is not to beat the other runners. Eventually you learn that the competition is against the little voice inside you that wants you to quit. The music of a marathon is a powerful strain, one of those tunes of glory. It asks us to forsake pleasures, to discipline the body, to find courage, to renew faith, and to become one's own person utterly and completely." It's the birthday of the man who said, "I am opposing a social order in which it is possible for one man who does absolutely nothing that is useful to amass a fortune of hundreds of millions of dollars, while millions of men and women who work all the days of their lives secure barely enough for a wretched existence." Eugene Debs, born in Terre Haute, Indiana, 1855, member of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Firemen, went on to become the editor of their national magazine, went to prison for supporting the Pullman strike of 1894, and ran for president on the socialist ticket in 1900. Eugene Debs said, "I recognize my kinship with all living things. I am not one bit better than the meanest on the earth. While there is a lower class, I am in it. While there is a criminal element, I am of it. While there is a soul in prison, I am not free." Here's a poem for today by Wesley McNair, entitled "The Book of A." Raised during the Depression, my stepfather responded to the economic opportunity of the 1950s by buying more and more cheap second-hand things meant to transform his life. "I got this for $100, he said, patting the tractor that listed to one side, or the dump truck that started with a roar and wouldn't dump. Spreading their parts out on his tarp, he'd make the strange whistle he said he learned from the birds for a whole morning before the silence set in. Who knows where he picked up the complete A to Z encyclopedias, embossed in gold and published in 1921. They were going to take these to the dump, he said. Night after night he sat up, determined to understand everything under the sun worth knowing, and falling asleep over the Book of A. Meanwhile, as the weeks, then the months passed, the moon went on rising over the junk machines in the tall grass of the only world my stepfather ever knew, and nobody wrote to classify his odd, beautiful whistle, formed somehow in the back of his throat when a new thing seemed just about to happen, and no words he could say expressed his hope." A poem by Wesley McNair, "The Book of A," from Talking in the Dark, published by David R. Godin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Weather outlook for the rest of the afternoon looks like these rain showers are going to continue. The highs will be around 41 for the rest of the day, and then tonight it's going to chill down just a few degrees, down to 37. We have southeast winds scheduled for 5 to 15 miles per hour with rain showers. And then Wednesday, about the same, a little bit cooler. Wednesday night, we're looking at scattered rain showers. Lows around 34, southeast winds about 10 miles per hour. And then Thursday, we're looking at cloudy with scattered rain showers. Highs back up around 41, southeast winds 5 miles per hour. So for the next couple, 3 days, it's basically just the same rain showers and light winds and like that, typical weather of the day for Juneau, and not too bad a thing for it to be at that. My next guest is Adam Doten Ferguson, who hangs out at Glacier Valley and Mendenhall River schools, going back and forth and helping lots of students engage in really interesting little programs that occur as part of the extended learning program. Adam, you're telling us about an upcoming competition that involves teaching our kids involved in a robotics program, right?
Yep, that's right. We are doing the first LEGO League, is what it's called, and the competition is on Saturday, December 14th, from 9 to 5. I am participating with Menhall River School. We have two teams there of six kids each, and they're getting coaches are getting a little tense about it, but the kids are loving it intensely. We're really glad to have two teams. So big thanks to the parent group and the parents for helping out with some fundraising that we did earlier in the year. We're able to purchase a new robot, and things are looking pretty good considering the two teams and everything that's going on with that. And then I also do the Glacier Valley. We have an after-school program for robotics. We're not registered in as a team, so we're just playing around with Legos. We're not really worried about the project and all the other things that go with it. So that's been a lot of fun there too.
So my audience for this show has more adults than children in it,
right,
which means that most of the people who are listening to us have probably never seen a Lego robot up close. Can you kind of describe what these things are capable of and what they look like?
Well, what they look like is you get like this. It's a rectangular cube, and it's known as the brain, is how I like to call it. It's where you you hook that up into the computer, and you have a special software program that you get with your robot, and you can do multiple things with it. In the kits that you have, they come with up to three motors and tons of little gadgets, lots of sensors. You have your sound sensor. You have your light sensor. You have your movement sensor, so it could tell when you're moving and what you want it to do when it sees that certain things. What's wonderful about these things is you end up with just this kit, and they give you a booklet of how to do one type of robot on there. What part of the challenge is with the competition is that they have to come up with a whole new way of setting up that robot and attachments for it to be able to do certain things. This year's competition is called Nature's Fury. So it's based on all of these natural events that happen. And so our job is to come in and figure out ways of, first off, the missions table is all set up, and there's one part where it's a tsunami thing, so you have to go over, you have to hit this lever, and it releases three Lego rolls down and onto your mat. The main purpose of that is to just get kids aware of natural disasters in our area and figuring out ways to either prevent them from happening or ways that we can quickly be able to stop the problem when it arises and fix it.
So when you said you walk over or you go over and pull this lever, the student actually does that?
The robot actually
does it.
Okay, I see. Once the robot hits the table and you hit the button for go, you have to program it to go everywhere around the table.
So you don't touch it again?
You don't touch it unless it messes up somewhere and you have to actually pull it off, take it off the mat, and start right back at the home base.
I see.
It's usually in a corner is where the home base is. What's interesting about it this year is the first year where there's one area where the kids can pick it up and try it over and over again without a touch penalty. And I think that's the obstacle course is what they named that, which is really cool because they have certain where they built these Legos up, and it starts out kind of small, and it kind of builds up for them to try and roll over to get over each one. So it'll be interesting when the competition comes what other teams have done to try and get through that portion of the missions.
Adam, do the students surprise you?
Absolutely. It is amazing to see when they come in with not knowing either quite a bit about it because they've done some previous things with JEDC in the summer, doing some Lego programming then, or coming in knowing nothing at all except for loving to build Legos. And they come in and they're building these things, and it's like, wow, you didn't know anything before, but now you can program a robot to do like four or five different things. And for them to realize that is a huge thing, and it's a huge boost of confidence for them.
And so this huge boost of confidence, do you see that reflecting in the rest of the things they do in school?
For the most part, I do. They seem to want to take more risks and try different things and see if it works or not. And I think that's really what we would like to see from all students.
That's a really interesting one of the real criticisms of education is mm-hmm. that students are not encouraged to take risks.
Yeah.
That basically the formula is to get the work done and do it the way the book says and that sort of thing. That's kind of the image that we have of education. But in reality, life requires that you periodically, what is it, Cousin Sakas says, periodically you have to take loose your belt and go out and look for trouble.
Right.
Anyway, so that's kind of interesting that this technological pursuit creates that action or reaction in the students.
And there's also a lot of troubleshooting where one day your computer might not work. And so figuring out how to still deal with the problems that we have to get through and not having to use the computer. And I think that's a huge thing with a lot of these students is that they've relied to themselves so much on the computer that they haven't gone back and gone, okay, what's the next thing that we can do? For instance, if our internet's down, we're doing research on something, where's our next source coming from? And fortunately, we have the library right there that we can go into and try and find more information out about those critical things that we're trying to look up.
So a student who starts in your program is in the elementary level
Mm-hmm.
Can they go on with this? Can they continue to do this through the rest of their schooling?
Yeah, the robotics program is for fourth and fifth grade at both schools. I'm at Glacier Valley and Mendenhall River. And I believe that Floyd Dryden has a team right now. So they can go on, take what they've learned from the 2 years that they were at the school, and then apply it to the same problems that we are given at the same level, and then take it on
to the next level.
To the next level.
And you mentioned JEDC. Do they have a robotics program as well? It's the Juneau Economic Development Council.
Yes, they're probably the main source of why this is happening in Juneau is because of the JEDC, because they help put on the competition and everything and find the volunteers for that. And it's just an amazing community effort and all around.
Kids start out buying Legos in the store because they want to make action figures and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. And it's really interesting that the educational system has seen a way to take that urge
right.
and to turn it into something that really produces change in the child.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an interesting way to turn a kid on to the excitement of education.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. And you do it as an after-school thing. So how many students do you have?
Right now I have we have 12 students at Mendenhall River, and when we first started this, we had one team. We registered for one team, and then we heard about some other people who might be interested, so we said, you know what, let's try it. Let's put on two teams, and we still have our 12 kids, but they all will participate and won't be, because the maximum number per team is 10 kids,
mm-hmm.
so they can't go over that. And so it's very critical that we have more than 10 to say yes. And again, it's a thanks to the Mendenhall River community for putting that on, and for Catherine Miller and the principal there for allowing us to say absolutely put on two teams. She's very supportive of the program there and wanting it to be just a huge success. So kudos to her as well.
Now you're coming up on the competition, which means that at the moment probably it would be hard for a student to get into this program. But what's the next opportunity that someone who's interested in joining the robotics program would have to get in?
Well, the next opportunity would be checking in and seeing if we're going to do I'm hesitant at the moment, being a first-year teacher, saying I want to do an afternoon in the spring for just doing the program and everything. Again, I could be persuaded anyway, so it's totally all right. But again, you know, the reason why I'm doing it is because I love this so much, and I really feel like it's a really good thing to have. I was, when I was in fifth grade, my teacher was very into science, and so I was in after school every day, or almost every day, working on some sort of science thing, whether it be electronic or just trying different circuits and whatnot, just to see what would happen and what would work. So it's basically the same thing, only you get to use Legos, which sounds phenomenal and fun, and you get to be using the computer for and trying to make things work, which is just phenomenal. And it's great at Glacier Valley. When we first signed up, I had 14 kids signed up wanting to participate. And right now, since it's just a club, it's dwindled down to around, on average, about 8 or 9 kids participating. And that's still just an amazing thing to have them. We don't have the kits for the missions, so they're just trying to figure out how to program their robots and seeing how they're being used. They're using the older NXT Mindstorms NXT, so you can look that up online and you can see all the different things that you can build. And most of them have taken some of the directions say, and they've totally changed it around, trying different things, and it is just amazing to see that happen and see them work that
yeah.
way.
Yeah. I wish we had visual because
right.
but I'm sitting here watching your face light up. It's obvious this thing excites you as much as it probably excites the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So the competition again is what date?
December 14th.
Okay,
it's
and
on a Saturday.
Can the public come watch this happen?
Yeah, it's a public. It's open to the public. I believe it's at Centennial Hall from 9 to 5.
Okay.
On that day, I'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure either and it's just a phenomenal thing. We've had teams from all over Southeast come, and it's just amazing to see the different projects that each group does, each team does, and we have no idea if they're going to have the same, if they're using the same topic as we are when it comes to researching, and if they're going to have, and if they do, chances are their idea is totally different from ours, and it's just really neat to see.
Well, outstanding. So December 14th, 9 to 5,
mm-hmm.
a chance to watch this in action and maybe meet some of the people who are involved in this thing and see if maybe your kid wants to get involved in the thing as well.
Yeah.
Family activity, really nice, at Centennial Hall, the competition for the robotics program. Thank you, Adam Doten-Ferguson, extended learning teacher down at Glacier Valley and Mendenhall River Schools, for telling us all about this.
Pirates, outlaws, family secrets, and outrageous comedy. The rest of the season at Perseverance Theater promises to be its best yet. Great seats, awesome savings, and wonderful benefits are still available by subscribing today. Treasure Island set sail on November 8th, followed by the world premiere of Rush at Everlasting, searing American classic Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and the outrageous farce Boeing Boeing. You won't want to miss a minute of the adventure. More information can be found online at perseverancetheater.org or by calling 463-TIXS.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, you can hear KTOO on GCI Cable, digital channel 871. And we're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much from listeners like you. Tune in to Juno Afternoon tomorrow when Lisa Fu will host. She will be talking about an upcoming fishing vessel conductor training course. She'll get some details about next week's Conference of Tlingit Tribes and Clans. Key Johnson will be here with a preview of her presentation scheduled on Friday at UAS, and then Lewy Body Dementia guest speaker Dr. Maureen Nash will be here. Ryan Scott from the State Department of Fish and Game will come in to highlight Wednesday's workshop on Sharing Juno's Trails. And you'll hear Writer's Almanac, music, and more on Wednesday at 3, tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, when we bring you Juno Afternoon again on KTOO FM.